This is What's at Risk on WBZ News Radio 1030 and WBZ.com with Mike Christian of Risk Strategies Company.
Hi, I'm Mike Christian, and welcome back to an all-new edition of What's at Risk. Don't forget to give us your ideas and feedback. Send your comments to What's at Risk at risk-strategies.com. That's What's at Risk, one word, at risk-strategies.com.
In times like these, in times like those, what will be, and so it goes.
Tonight on What's at Risk, we take a fresh look at challenges in the workplace from both the employee and the employer perspectives. In segment one, we'll visit with Christine Porath, co-author of The Cost of Bad Behavior, How Incivility is Damaging Your Business and What to Do About It.
And it always goes on and on and on and on.
Then, in segment two, we talk to Mark Murphy about what really motivates people in their work. Mark is the author of 100 Percenters. Challenge your employees to give it their all, and they'll give you even more.
I had kind of an interesting morning. This morning. I call it interesting. I use that word because I don't have a nice day anymore. Frankly, I don't bother with them. I feel as if I've outgrown the nice day. Let someone else have a few. I've had my share. Why should I be hogging all the really nice ones? So I feel like I'm beyond the nice day now. Of course, people still want me to have one. Everybody wants me to have a nice day.
Have a nice day.
Yeah. Could you give me my change, please?
In 2003, David Trumbull landed a challenging, well-paying job with a Fortune 500 telecommunications firm. Although the firm had interviewed many qualified candidates, Dave's enthusiasm and can-do spirit made him the company's first choice. Once he was on the job, Dave's prospects seemed bright. His new colleagues were sure that he would succeed.
She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone.
Less than 2 months later, however, he left the firm. The reason? Poor behavior. Not his, but that of his new colleagues.
Bad to the bone.
Leaders ran around shouting at people, Dave reported. Employees took out their frustrations on each other. It sure wasn't what I was looking for in a job. Who treats people that way? Well, American business has an incivility problem, and it's getting worse. Tune into interactions in many workplaces, and you'll spot employees speaking to subordinates in condescending tones, ignoring email or phone messages, claiming excessive credit for their team's accomplishments, browsing on their iPhones or texting during meetings, and leaving malfunctioning office equipment for the next user to fix.
In a world con man, you're so bad.
About one-fourth of workers polled in 1998 said they were treated rudely once or more a week. By 2005, that number had risen to nearly half. An astonishing 95% of workers in 2005 reported experiencing incivility from their coworkers. A recent Gallup study entitled Feeling Good Matters in the Workplace found that 73% of workers don't feel good. Of the respondents to the Gallup poll, 14% say that they were actively disengaged as a result, and they admitted to doing what they can to undermine their organizations and their coworkers. Incivility's measurable costs alone are enormous. Job stress, for instance, cost U.S. corporations $300 billion a year, much of which has been shown to stem from workplace incivility. But incivility's true impact stretches far beyond that which is measurable in dollar terms. Incivility unleashes a set of complicated and destructive dynamics on individuals, teams, and organizations that impede performance and create organizational dysfunction on a number of levels, leading to diminished financial results.
And baby, remember, it's my life.
Christine Pearson and Christine Porath examine the devastating toll that bad behavior can have on otherwise well-functioning companies in their new book, The Cost of Bad Behavior. Christine Porath is an assistant professor of management at the Marshall School of Business at the University of Southern California. She and Christine Pearson have received national and international media attention for their work, and their research has been featured in publications such as the Harvard Business Review, the Wall Street Journal, and the Financial Times.
We're speaking with Christine Porath, the author of Cost of Bad Behavior. So I read, through your book, that 12% of all employees say they've left jobs because they were treated badly. And I know from my own experience that managers spend a lot of time resolving employee conflicts. Why is this problem with incivility becoming so prevalent?
Well, I think one reason is certainly what's going on in society. We bring it to the workplace. So, there seem to be a lot of stressors, whether it's the economy and things of that nature, as well as norms for behavior outside the workplace. So whether it's, home in terms of what kids learn or schools in terms of how they're treated by other children, I think that all of those different societal influences certainly play a role. And then today's lean and highly competitive global business environment certainly leaves a lot of employees feeling like they're being stretched like bungee cords. So, many say that they feel stressed and that they simply don't have time to be nice, although that's not exactly what we're talking about. But increased job insecurity and the rise of short-term work also have reduced worker loyalty to each other and to the company. And so people say that there simply isn't enough time or incentive to be civil toward one another.
That's sad.
I know.
That's really not a very good statement about our society today.
No. We collected some data on this, so I'm just telling you what we're hearing.
Isn't this learned behavior, though? I mean, when you grow up, my parents always taught me to be nice to people and say please and thank you and, try and contain yourself in difficult situations. Isn't it more something that comes when you're a child?
I think a lot of it does. Certainly, there have been many managers that have told us that they can't do anything once these people hit the workplace. In other words, it's not their job to teach them personal interrelationships, and being nice and just doing people right, so to speak. However, I think the good news is that a lot of different training programs have been very successful for different businesses. Whether it's we've heard from sending doctors to charm school, which I thought they were kidding, but they really meant it, to negotiation courses, to anger management, to emotional intelligence. So a lot of different types of programs that might help people's skills in this area have made a difference. So I think that's the positive. But you're right in the sense of, it'd be wonderful if everyone learned this growing up and, organizations didn't have to take this on. But it's just not, doesn't seem to be what's going on.
It does seem, this may be a little bit of a tangent, but that the media and what we see on TV and some of the celebrities, I mean, there have been some recent incidents with tennis players and other entertainers where the behavior really was not good.
Right.
And everybody sees it, and, I guess that maybe reinforces it in some way.
Absolutely. So, unfortunately, rudeness begets rudeness, and people, whatever they see or even hear, it primes them for bad behavior. So it certainly can be something where kids look up to these folks, and when they see them throw temper tantrums on the tennis court or, grab the mic from someone else on stage, that they think, wow, they're getting a lot of attention for this. This is just how we do things. But I also think that there are some positive examples that hopefully, outweigh that. Certainly, we know from lots of studies, too, that when people witness this kind of thing, they're much more likely to behave that way.
in an organization, there's, and I'm in a business, and I notice the behavior of a business and what is within a culture. And, you know, there are things like the use of BlackBerries, for instance, where,
right,
you know, constantly, and it drives me out of my mind, but constantly in meetings or, you know, even if I'm just talking to somebody, the BlackBerry seems to take precedence over the person or the thing that you're doing, you
yeah.
know, at that point in time. Why has it become, is it, it's just technology led to a lot of distractions, which in turn leads to bad behavior?
I think you're onto something. So people have talked about how, you know, they just have too much to focus on, too many other things. So, you know, there have been people that talk about we have cognitive overload and, you know, that's prompting a lot of this kind of behavior. But, you know, I certainly encounter it in the classroom now. So, which I never thought would be the case, but I think particularly for the, you know, the younger folks coming through, again, that's the norm. You know, you're always on, so to speak. So the phone is always on, texting is always on, you know, the web, you're constantly browsing. So, you know, it's just something that unfortunately we're competing for each other's attention with a lot of different technology nowadays. So ideally in the business setting, you know, there are some norms set for this kind of behavior in terms of what's appropriate, what's not, when it's turned off and for meetings and that kind of thing. But it's really disruptive. So, you know, hopefully it's something that changes, but it seems to be getting worse.
Now, in an organization where really that kind of behavior, at least those things we were just talking about, is fairly prevalent, doesn't mean that everybody's rude to each other all the time. But does the tone start at the top in most organizations?
Yes. So leaders set the tone. And, you know, that's why we like to start there in terms of recommendations that, you know, you need to set zero tolerance policy, but really it's about looking in the mirror and making sure that the leaders are role modeling the right kind of behavior. Because, you know, over a quarter of the people that we've surveyed have said our leaders act this way. You know, that's why we misbehave. Again, they're examples, and so it's really important that they set the tone and communicate how important it is, but then live those values.
Now, in your research, do you look at companies that where the culture is civil and the behavior is positive and others where it's not? Do you ferret through that?
Yes, we do. So we've surveyed a lot of different organizations and been able to compare. And actually what's interesting when we do that is that we see the performance increases in, you know, those companies where apparently there's, you know, norms for more respectful behavior. And those are ratings based on, like, objective ratings by managers and so forth saying, you know, that's the performance they're getting from folks. So we try to talk about how people, you know, learn better, perform better, are more creative, you know, are less likely to leave the workplace and things like that, so that we can show direct cost comparisons between them.
What are the earmarks of good behavior, or what are the earmarks in corporations that engender good behavior and then in corporations maybe that don't?
Well, I think, you know, we feature several different companies, but, you know, one thing would be hiring, you know, for attitude and training for skills, and that's something famous at Southwest Airlines. And Microsoft is a company that's revamped its training programs to focus on open and respectful interactions among workers, and they've seen a really positive response as far as performance, but also people's satisfaction in the culture. Cisco has designed a whole global workplace civility program that includes training managers on how to spot and deal with the behavior. DaVita Dialysis was actually a company that was really doing horribly, and they revamped their whole business along the lines of civility, and you know, it really paid off, whether it was training, selecting people, rewarding people based on this behavior, not about necessarily just performance and things of that nature. So, you know, there are a lot of different things that companies can be doing. I think the important thing is that, you know, they're relatively small steps that are taken consistently and relentlessly.
I go out and find me a job, but I suffer from the fear that I just might find one and ruin my whole career. I won't ask for nothing, baby, and nothing's all I wanna be. Can't you see? Accept the devil as my savior and take me some time off bad behavior. Bad behavior.
We're here with Christine Porath, the author of The Cost of Bad Behavior.
Now, your book is called The Cost of Bad Behavior. What is the financial cost and other cost of bad behavior for an organization?
Well, a few stats would be that, you know, over half complain that when they're treated this way, they intentionally decrease their work effort and the amount of time that they put into their work. Two-thirds complain that they waste time worrying about what's happened, and they contemplate ways to avoid or respond to the offender. Almost all admit that their performance and their commitment to the organization plummet. As you cited, 12% will leave the company based on, you know, being treated uncivilly just once. And, stress is a huge cost, which we haven't really documented well exactly what that's costing companies, but is something that organizations certainly care about in terms of dealing with even absenteeism and turnover as a result, as well as healthcare costs. So those are just a few of the statistics, if you will, that we try to highlight for managers. And that doesn't include, you know, managers' time and energy focusing on this kind of thing in terms of mending employee relationships and replacing workers that leave as a result of this bad behavior.
That makes sense. Now, I find people on the job, and maybe this is a little outside of bad behavior, but I think related to it, but oftentimes people become sort of subtly disengaged when they're either shunned or somehow become disconnected from their team or from the group. How does that happen, and what can managers do to mitigate that or manage through it?
Yeah, that's actually one of the things that we found really interesting is it's not just that people are intentionally performing worse, but really they can't focus as well. And we know that they don't remember as well and perform as well mentally. So I think the important thing is for managers to be aware to look for changes in performance for people and any kind of talk as far as the grapevine goes, you know, listening into what people may be buzzing about, for example. If something has gone on in the team, it can be really disruptive in terms of pulling everyone off track. But, you know, looking for changes in their behavior as well as their morale, sticking around and doing the extra things, if any of those things are changing, it's likely that, you know, they feel like they were slighted in some way. And so ideally addressing it, you know, one-on-one, asking them about it is certainly a start in terms of rooting out the information. And unfortunately, a lot of people are afraid to talk about this kind of thing because they don't want to appear soft, or they feel like, you know, for over half of them feel like the company will not do anything about it. And especially if it's coming from their boss or something, they're very fearful and they don't have a lot of hope that things are going to change. And so they'll spend time and energy thinking about, you know, greener pastures and possibly finding, you know, something else outside of that organization. So I think it's really important to check in with employees and then try to, you know, mend things if possible. A lot of times when these slights happen, the person doesn't know that they misbehaved. So we're talking about a lot of this is kind of a gray area. You know, it's ambiguous in terms of the intent. And so that becomes important in terms of getting the information back to the offender. And, you know, hopefully he or she does things differently.
Yeah, I find that, or at least my observation is that when people are engaged and part of a group, they're less likely to, you know, start to disconnect themselves and go off and become less effective.
Yeah, unfortunately, when it happens within a group, it pulls everyone off track. And
right.
So you are looking for, you know, the people that aren't cooperating as much as they were and things like that. But I think you're right, especially in today's workplace where, you know, teams is such a big part of many organizations, you know, it touches so many people and, you know, can ruin relationships long term. So it's important to, you know, try to pick up on these things as quickly as possible.
So maybe just one last question is, how do individuals and organizations, and maybe just a couple of examples, you know, reduce the incivility and the bad behavior and create more of a culture of respect?
I do think it's, you know, having a mission statement and some values around respect and treating people well. The idea is that you do set a zero tolerance policy in the sense of, you know, it's not something that's going to be accepted, that leaders do look in the mirror and make sure that they're, you know, setting up a positive example for others. Ideally, you train managers to recognize and respond to early signals, like you just talked about, and that organizations take complaints seriously so that when people do report it, there's an idea that, you know, they're not going to ignore it, and even if it's the rainmakers or folks that are powerful in the organization, that, you know, that they're going to respond to complaints and not make excuses for powerful offenders. And, you know, another thing that companies can do that's really not much of a financial investment is just exit interviews. So, and a lot of times that means, you know, a delay from when the person actually leaves the firm, but trying to get information about, you know, what went on and so forth. And oftentimes there's a pattern of this, and companies just aren't aware that there's been, you know, someone that has really gotten a lot of people to leave as a result of their bad behavior.
How about individuals? You know, you had mentioned that people just frankly don't have enough time to act nice anymore. What kind of advice would you give to all of the rest of us, you know, in a time like this when we're so stressed and there is very little time, that really this is important?
Well, I think it's, you know, trying, of course, having, you know, being motivated to be on your best behavior, but trying to catch yourself when you are tired out or stressed out, you know, and that can be for some people just knowing, you know, if it's a particular time in the day that they're, you know, more aware of themselves or they don't send the tense emails at that time because they're likely to go off on people. So things of that nature. But really, for many managers, it's trying to find out what their employees think about them and whether that's done in an anonymous way, as many organizations do, or, you know, trying to get people to speak up about it. Some will hire coaches or consultants. Others videotape themselves and are just really shocked at how they come off, including the tone that they use. So there's a lot of different ways to try to capture how you come off in terms of tone and language and all of that, as well as just, this is so perception-based, meaning it's all in the eyes of the beholder, how people feel, you know, if they feel they're slighted at all by you, trying to get that information and then making changes. So, you know, for many, it is the teammates that will, you know, can kind of speak up about this kind of thing if given the right opportunities. So all of that is helpful in terms of, you know, an individual becoming more aware of their tendencies for some of this bad behavior.
Yeah, that's great advice. We've been speaking with Christine Porth, the author of Cost of Bad Behavior. Is there a place that people can go to get more information?
Sure. The costofbadbehavior.com has some resources that if people may be interested if they're looking for more information.
How many times have you heard someone say, if I had his money, I could do things my way? But little they know that it's so hard to find one rich man in ten with a satisfied mind.
Time for a CBS News update. We'll be right back with more What's at Risk.